If a man can speak in trance, he can speak. Period. There is nothing physically wrong. And if a man cannot speak in trance, he can give you sign language that will allow you to override enough to find out why he does not speak. It's a game. 20 questions. So let's talk about hypnotherapy. I go with gift. If you have to make more than 8 appointments, you got a problem that may be outside your ability to handle. Because if you have not accomplished something in 8 sessions, you ain't worth your weight in salt. So let them go. And a person right in this town was ready to have surgery to cut nerves. And Doris said, "Don't, my God, don't do that. Come over here and let me work with you, and we can find out whether or not you can be helped otherwise. Because if you don't do this maneuver in trance, then there's no reason you can't do it this way forever." But once you cut those nerves, he knew. He had had some injections, and it happened to affect his upper from his eyes up for it. He squinched to the point that he could not even drive. His wife had to take him everywhere. He was totally unable to socially function. And he had had injections around his eyes before to relax his muscles. But he couldn't shut his eyelids. He slept with his eyes open. And that is so drying to the eyeball that he was in agony. And that's what he knew he would be facing again. And so he came over to Doris's house. And they sat for maybe 2 hours working on this and placing this need into some other function that would allow him to at least relieve that part, because in 5 minutes it was established whether or not he had to do that because of physical something or it was emotional. And in just a few minutes he had come to the point where he couldn't do it in trance. Couldn't do it. Could not even, no matter how hard he tried, do it. And if it works in trance, there is no real physical reason for it to control you outside of trance. So it is a great responsibility. And if you want to get up on the stage and you want to have fun doing hypnosis, fine. But these ads, I'm warning you, these ads that advertise, "Be a hypnotist, get control over your lover, do this, do that, attract women and bring them under your macho control." Dangerous. And these people like Dr. Dante, it is the same Dante that Kathy O'Brien writes about. He has weekend seminars. He will go to Orange County. He will go to Chicago. He is flamboyant. And in 2 days, he will give you a certificate that makes you a certified hypnotherapist. You are nothing except sick yourself by the time he's through with you. And that's where he finds his susceptible people. We take it very, very seriously. If we want to play games, then we are not going to play games. And it doesn't mean that things have to be unjoyful. There's no reason you can't have fun. Ones always want to know what is the experience like. Well, it is like nothing you expect, because all of you expect, because of the Dantes of the world bringing you under helpless control. I'm not even going to get into mind programming. Or brainwashing. That is a very sophisticated other subject. But hypnosis is a state of altered consciousness, not even unconsciousness. And when I say altered, it is only a change in reference. It is a state of being totally relaxed, even if you're moving. It is simply a state of being. The interesting thing is, the mind is open and more alert to everything around it. But it wants to go with whatever its teacher, or I don't even like the term handler. You see, the evil cotton pickers have ruined everything that is a good mental explanation for something. If I'm working with someone like Kathy, doesn't mean she's either asleep or in my control. She has chosen to want to do what I've asked her to do. If you volunteer to go up and play with a hypnotist on the stage, for goodness sakes, why do you do it? You go up there to experience. And you may say, oh, I don't want it to happen, then don't go up there. Because actually you do. And you like this person up there. He's played to the crowd, and he's having a good time, and you're having a good time, and you want to participate. So what you are actually doing is you want to cooperate with him. You want to make him look good. Well, it's a real error if he is ass enough to only want to make himself look good. He's not going to be successful. Because it's the people he brings up on the stage that become the stars. They want to please him. They want to please the audience. They want to come out of that little shell they're in, and they want to participate. They want to do what they're asked to do. And for goodness sakes, if Sandy has someone coming to her office to get some relaxation, they want to get some relaxation. If they come to Kathy for a massage, they want some relief. And that's where the therapy part comes in. It's not fair just to get into someone's mind. But it's not damaging. To make it look bad, there was all mind control. Nobody can control your mind except yourself. And if it's against your will, if it is against your moral code, there are things you won't do. You flat won't do them. You will come out of trance. And the level of trance is only a level of suggestibility where you will function. And if you have a major problem, getting to that problem doesn't require great inability to function in the critical mind. If you're going to work with someone, you should spend as much time as maybe that whole first session, an hour, 2 hours, getting some background and writing it down. If they mention Uncle Joe in their little story, well, when did you first consciously tell me when you first had this stutter? I don't know, I've always had it. Okay, you now know. Did you stutter in high school? Grade school, kindergarten? I don't know. I stuttered all the time. Write it down. Is it worse at sometimes? Yes. it's worse if my Uncle Joe's around. Clue. It doesn't matter what you as the physician knows. But it does matter what you as a physician takes responsibility for. You now know that there may be something connected to Uncle Joe. You also can suspect, clue-wise, that this happened sometime before this child went to school, or maybe about the time the child went to school. It couldn't stutter up until the time a child could normally talk, could it? So you're going to find that a lot of these problems are going to go back between that period of time of birth to 3 years old, for instance, where communication skills get better and habits are being set. A mind-controlled person wants a subject birth to 3. And then they've got it. And then the younger the child after that, the better they can manipulate. Abuse the child before 3, and you've got them. Because the child will split its personality to deal with it. It has no other way. Can't talk. It cannot logically reason. The brain is not mature enough to allow it. If you can get that communication going sooner, and some babies are born able to talk sooner than others, and then get it out. You heard me. Who heard you? Dada. You know, whatever. That is the ability to communicate. And yet, if there is not a trusting situation or a secure situation, the child isn't going to tell mommy. So this is going to build and build and build until all that person has to do is walk in the room, the personality splits off and takes out off. And you've got fragmentation. And no matter how long you talk to the person, in their critical mind, they're not going to know. They may even begin to have dreams about it later, and then they will shut off the dream because it is so miserable. So a therapist can only be there to nail those clues, require that the mind confront it. And other than that, the therapist never has to butt into their business. The exception being that the subconscious mind will sometimes find such pain that it will hide also. So you have to know what you're doing. And sometimes you have to allow the anger to be expressed. Can you imagine what it is like for an adult woman to confront the fact that her father raped her and abused her from birth on, and she's managed to hide them? Can you imagine how furious and hurt and angry and needing to express that hurt and anger physically can be? You can have a total chaotic situation while a person works this out. And if you don't know what you're doing, then you have got to let these people work it out. Then you can get hurt. So it isn't fair play with it. If you want to go back and play in it, then do it for that reason. I would like to remember my first Christmas, my fifth Christmas, a very special time in my life that I can vaguely remember. I'd like to look at it. So when you talk about regressive play or regression therapy, you're very apt to flop over into the prior existence. and I get to see you out on that limb. But you're going to find that many of the problems that you might have are only exacerbated in this environment. They were created in that environment. And each one will say, well, I would like to know what I was when Dorma was at Madden. Why? You have a problem? You say, look at it. Is that a problem to you? You're just curious. Do you just want to label? Do you? Why do you need to know? Why do you want to know? You see, she never wanted to know. Each time she had to confront some of her past experiences, I had to force it on her. She needed to know because she needed to meet a responsibility. You see, along with knowing comes a responsibility of accepting and a responsibility of service. Then why am I back here now and why am I with you? Why are we in this room together? And why do you want to know? Is it that you're not going to do your job if you don't like who you were? Do you think it will be different if you remember your purpose? I can guarantee you, you will refuse to remember your purpose. It's not something that I would block out. But you will remember one thing of honor, that you agreed to do something. And in that agreement, you have honored the fact that you have agreed not to take off because you have a mission. And many will fall to the side. Many are not in the mission. They think they are, but they're not. They can become part of the mission if they want to be. But you will notice how many play with it, hurt you, and go their way. And then continue to argue because they cannot let go of you because they know you got it. They don't. And the only way that kind of mentality can handle it is to totally destroy you. And then they're even more miserable, but they won. They won't want anything except help. But you can grow above the need to revenge. On the other hand, you do need to come into the stability and the responsibility of confronting it and stop running away from it. And those people who harm you. If they're harming Dorma, I will tell you something. It isn't singular. They are wiping out your job as deliberately as if they were after you. Who do the enemy try to get? The one that can close down the situation. They will work on her because that is the nearest way they think they can get to me. And yet now they know that I would have 25 speakers in the next 20 minutes. So it doesn't really do any good to try to stop her or kill her or get her out of the way anymore. So the only way they can do it is to discredit. And then she can say, well, God told me it'd be this way because Grandfather did. He said. They will first laugh. Then they will ridicule. Then they will discredit. Then they will blame. And finally, they will set up a staged event to make you the blame. Now, we've gone through just about all that, haven't we? And Grandfather was right. And you've made it. So we're going to make it the rest of the way. And I just wanted to share with you ones a little bit about what we're about. And when you get this old mind control stuff coming back from David Horton, Well, she studied with a master's teacher, Jill Boyne. Isn't he in CIA mind control? Oh. Certainly not. But he's certainly an honorary member of the Special Forces of the United States of America, Green Beret. Gil comes up and puts his arm around Dorman and says, "What do you hear from Bo?" And he says, "Well, Bo thinks I'm crazy." And Rick can verify the pain on his face. And she said, "He's looking and searching for his spiritual life." And Gil says, "I've worked with him so long. You have to know. His God, country, order, discipline, nothing else. Everything else is gone. But you see, it's not God, country, discipline. They become subject to the will of the liar. And if you can watch someone like you, Gordon Liddy, who will put his hand over a flame, and that's supposed to make you look macho, it's crazy. And he will also tell you he would do it again. He would kill for his nation. And then when the nation finally, it seeps through, my government, my nation, my commanding officer has lied to me. The mind doesn't know what to do with it in the moment. It has no idea what to do with it anymore. So I will dig around in all this stuff, but you see, I did all this other stuff, and it provides me with a living, and it does this, and I rather like the attention I'm getting, because after all, I was sent in to get shot. There's no ability to relate properly to anything anymore. And all of these triggers. These people going off into the jungles, it doesn't matter what happens in the jungle, because it will not even be represented in their mind the same way as it happened. Can you imagine they're having to justify within their own beings murder? Only murder on a very large scale. I would hope that all of you will go back and read this section that we wrote years ago on Gunther Rusbacher when he went in to get the child, the boy, out of a particular nation. Now, you wouldn't think a child would, one child would be that important when you've got thousands in these pornography rings, would you? But you've got some very high-ranking people still in that business. And you have warped minds doing the business. I'm talking warped. And there's money in the business. And part of it. Entire little operation of something, maybe to test the mettle of the men you send in. It won't usually be to get the child, as in Brooklyn's case, it's to kill everybody in the building. But it gives Gunther, let us say, an opportunity to do something noble, to get the child out. I had to kill everybody in the place. But I got the child out. I saved this child. He doesn't care about the child. That is also an idea. It's an idea. So it is an absolutely fascinating subject. And it's something that all of you need to know about, because undoubtedly it will increase the amount of impact that will try to come against you from the ignorance of a society who doesn't know what they're talking about. In other words, you are a hypnotist and you are evil. We certainly don't want you in our church group. And we don't want to sit too close to you because we don't know what you may do to me. So you have to be very subtle about how you speak of these things. As with Evelyn, she could go back to Salt Lake and she could now handle some of these little princesses that are going to stuff her down the toilet. She can just get them into an absolute state of total relaxation in about 2 seconds. And how nice that they are so relaxed that they can just rest there for a whole hour. Well, isn't that lying? No, that's playing a wise, wise role with the school board that would never allow hypnotism to be used. It's so evil. But relaxation after lunch is totally acceptable for a bunch of little mothers straight off the street, still packing their razor blade in their cheek. We're dealing with a different world, people. Kathy, please.
Be an opportunity here for our side to go back now and see. Up to now, there's been a question as to whether we have a secured position versus an unsecured position. But one of the results of this hearing today is a clarification of that, and we have both. We've contended that we have both. They've argued that we were only unsecured. And the difference is that if you have a secured position, you can ask for what is technically called bifurcation, which means division, separation of the unsecured portion from the secured portion so that you can get on with your lives if you have security. You can recapture your security and go off with that part. And then actually, what happens there is that if that were successful, then we would get the books into our custody. We would have to sell the books at some sort of auction and take whatever we got and deduct it from whatever they owe, which is well over $200,000 now, and the difference would then go into the unsecured portion, and when the bankruptcy was completed, that would come out as a judgment against George for whatever that differential is. The likelihood of those journals, no matter how many there are, there's supposed to be 100,000, but it turns out that they're now reporting something closer to 43,000, and there's more to be done in that area. There's definitely fraud going on in their representation of one batch of books and then another batch of books, and this batch belongs to distributors, and this batch belongs to publishers, and so forth. Lots of shell games that need to be sorted out, but I think we can get those sorted out in Griffin's court, because it was Griffin that said, I want all of these books under lock and key, no further sales, no messing around, and this next motion gets to go back to Griffin's court, and if it works the way it's supposed to, it will probably come out with something between 90 and 110,000 volumes that inside, say, America West Publisher and so forth, so we'll probably have to sticker those as we send them out, but that's not so bad as having to republish them, because it costs $4,000 or $5,000 for each book to republish it. So we could certainly use that help. Pardon me? Well, the basic publisher's page, ISBN number, page, you know, the whole thing has to be marked up some way so that they know it's not America West Publishing book now and it belongs to Phoenix Source. Yes. The alternative to that would be just to sell them for scrap and start all over again. And that's, I don't know where we are in terms of economics. This, you know, we don't know the condition of the books. The scrap value of the books is probably a few hundred dollars. And
well, that's the number you're going to want to use in the court.
Yeah. We'll just have to wait and see how the whole situation unfolds. But anyway, Brad and Gene are on their way back to Brad's office to work the rest of the day on some of the other things that are going on. And I couldn't even begin to recap those things. It's an ongoing fight with Mr. Horn. Whether we go now to an additional protective order in order to quash certain discovery, I don't know how they're going to resolve that. That's one of the issues they have to resolve today. But Mr. Horn absolutely doesn't want to go back to Judge Wallace before the trial. And so there's a lot of leverage there. Just about every time Kelly jumps up and says, well, this deposition is over. If you're not going to cooperate, I'll cooperate, I'll cooperate. We are gaining a little bit there, and Mr. Horn is becoming a great deal more selective about those things that he asks for seriously. He doesn't quit throwing up balloons, but and we don't know how all that's going to turn out, but it's actually beginning to look a little positive. I guess that's about as good a note as I can end on. Yes, because because Ellie told him he wasn't going to get it. He'd have to go for a protective order, I mean a motion to compel, and he didn't think it was worth it.
Shall we take a break? Well, I'm with the crowd. What do we want to do with this? Well, it's funny you should mention that. I believe we started yesterday, and that's why I'm giving you some background. There are things that have to be done through the day. And yet there is life that has to be lived in the evening, too. I have a real tendency when I start something to push it through because I think the learning process, even though it may seem to go into overload, I believe that enough rubs off to make it worthwhile. Push. On the other hand, we're not all of us going to go out and become hypnotherapists. And if we were going to do that, we would want to accreditate at least the teachers in school. And it actually, you can go and you can study with anybody, but it means you're going to have to pass the Hypnotist Board of Examiners. And I mean, they have examinations. It is not like, oh, well, you just graduate here and you're in. There are boards to be taken. And it's usually pretty sure that Gil is going to make sure you get everything that's on the board of examination, but you're going to know it. It becomes iffy when you're dealing with other at-random teachers who aren't going to teach you possibly the same thing and forget. But we can work it out. If we want just some working hypnosis to begin to be a little bit better with our clients, if we have that kind of a livelihood or career, that's one thing. If we want to just learn a little bit more about hypnosis with ourselves so that we can increase our level of ability for memory and learning and things like that, we take a little different approach. There's some of you that probably would find it a pleasure to go back and look just for the hell of it at some of those things in the past, and I feel like probably that's more where we fit. There's some of you who could clear up some problems that annoy you now. Claudia is one that I can name. Because when we look at why we do or have or present in such a way as whatever might be the circumstance, we usually get a lot of relief. We can handle stuttering so that it becomes a positive stutter. And that's almost as bad a shock for the person as a stuttering one. Because usually they will create something else. I have found in watching people over a zillion years that there are some things that will always occur in a different way. If we learn to control the migraine headache, the party will come back with psoriasis or something. Because you have to remember that illness becomes a friend. And you began to live with that friend, and you began to work around that friend. And when you have removed the crutch that that friend represents, you're lost. So in every long-term dysfunction, I don't like the word illness. In every long-term dysfunction, you have learned to use that as your weapon, it's your friend, it is your excuse, it is your crutch. I'm too heavy, I will feel bad to get up in front, so I must lose weight. No, That's not your problem. You are uncomfortable to get up, and you are using overweight as your excuse, because it doesn't matter what is weight. Weight is something cellular. You assume it may be that you want to lose or gain or adjust or do something, but it is truly not weight. Well, if I didn't have this thumb that I couldn't bend, I could do what? Well, what is it that you want to do? Well, I feel so silly up here in front of everybody when my thumb stuck out. I could even give you a better one, and we could use this as a demonstration. What if your elbow won't bend? How are you going to eat if that's your only arm? So yeah, we can deal with a lot of these things, because once you find out that there's nothing wrong with the elbow, you still won't bend it until you have permission of self to bend it. And you won't get permission of self until you confront why it is you got it out there in the first place. If it's fused, then you know it, and you quit trying to bend it, and you go on with your life. And you don't just say, oh my God, if I could just bend my arm, or if I weren't so fat, or if I weren't this, or I were that. So why do you want to do something? Would it be handy for her to be able to bend her elbow to do a better job of her work? She can't type with her arm sticking out in the air like that. Or do you just not want to look silly? Do you think that losing weight is going to change your life? Or are you going to have to change yourself?